You know, you've got a reclusive regime when an outside world hungry for clues salivates at the prospect of a visit by Vladimir Putin. He's only the second Russian president to visit North Korea. The first, 24 years ago, was also Vladimir Putin. We'll ask our panel what they've parsed from reviews of honor guards, official toasts and communiques, as well as hagiographic state media coverage. More broadly, do these images project strength or weakness? Will Putin get the mortar shells and missiles he needs for his war in Ukraine? Will Kim Jong-un get the sanctions-busting link to the outside world Pyongyang needs to ease some of its dependence on that other neighbor, China? And what about the spiking tensions with Pacific rivals, starting with South Korea? We'll ask about warning shots again this week across the 38th parallel and ballistic missile tests in past months in the Pacific that have the South Koreans drawing closer to old rivals Japan. We focus a lot in this show on Taiwan, but what about the Korean Peninsula? Today in the France 24 debate, Kim rolling out the red carpet for Putin with us from Washington. He's a former U.S. diplomat posted in a previous life to Seoul. Henry Haggard, thank you for joining us.
Great to be here. Thanks.
From Boston, Irina Busigina, visiting scholar at Harvard University's Davis Center for Russian and Eurasian Studies. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hello.
We're also joined by former correspondent for Agence France-Presse in China, Pierre-Antoine Denet, author of China, the Super Predator and the Challenge for the Planet. Good to see you.
Thank you.
The France 24 debate, where you can react on the hashtag F24debate. There's nothing wrong with your screen. We're still in 2024. And yes, we can show you images from Pyongyang's Kim Il-sung Square for a very Democratic People's Republic of Korea welcome for Russia's president. Tom Kennedy has more on what's been a state visit day.
A spectacle in Pyongyang. Kim Jong-un and Vladimir Putin have signed a new partnership deal, including a vow of mutual aid if either are attacked.
The government of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea appreciates the role and mission the powerful Russian Federation serves in maintaining the world's strategic stability and balance. And we express our full support for the Russian government's special military operation in Ukraine to protect its sovereignty, interests, and the stability of its territory.
Putin thanked Kim for his support on Ukraine, saying that North Korea takes a balanced approach to the war in his first visit to the communist country in 24 years.
The Russian Federation does not rule out the development of military technical cooperation with the Democratic People's Republic of Korea in accordance with the document signed today.
Putin's visit comes amid concerns from the West that North Korea will provide munitions to Russia to fuel its war in Ukraine. In exchange, Russia could be providing economic assistance and technology transfers that could enhance Pyongyang's nuclear program. North Korea is under heavy UN Security Council sanctions over its nuclear weapons program, while Russia is also under sanctions by the US and Western partners for its war in Ukraine.
Henry Haggard, plenty of images sent through by state media from Russia, from North Korea, this Wednesday. This is all, of course, carefully filtered, carefully staged. What do you read when you look at those images?
Well, thanks for the question. I think the images are it's just pageantry, and this is what North Korea and Russia really thrive on for their domestic audience. But I think the important thing here is that this is really an arms deal. It's two countries that are desperate, one for military munitions to fuel their illegal war of aggression, the other for satellite technology and otherwise in North Korea. But it's an arms deal. But beyond that, it's Russia really institutionalizing its international isolation by signing this deal with North Korea. And it's North Korea is getting a lifeline out of complete isolation. So I think that's what the imagery is, standard theater. But the meaning is an arms deal with a start of a new structure for Northeast Asia.
Standard imagery. Let me turn now. We're joining our conversation from Tanzania's capital is academic and consultant Theo Clément. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate. Every time there are these summits, every time we get images from North Korea, we're so drawn to them. We're trying to get clues as to what it's like there. Did you learn anything this Wednesday?
No, but I'm trying to stay away from what I call the Pyongyangology, just like there was the Kremlinology back in the.
So it's better not to look at the images.
No, I mean I'm a big fan of looking at these images because I even after 10 years I still feel drawn just like you are, but I'm not sure that beyond. I mean, it's much more important than the theatrics. We need to look at, of course, the text of the framework agreement that was signed on, and we need to see in the future what this meeting is going to, how is it going to translate into action? Is it going to be just an arms deal, or is it going to be more trade? Is it going to be more a diplomatic cover for the DPRK? Is it going to trigger China into getting closer to the DPRK, just like it was during the Cold War? So yeah, I mean it's impressive. It's a bit odd, I have to say, but there is much more than meet the eyes here, of course.
Pierre-Antoine Denet, you're a music lover. Feast your ears, if you will, on this. It's from the gala that took place. Two Koreans. You can listen in, and they sang both in Korean. And in Russian. And it just seems like it's something from another era. You were telling me earlier about your trip to North Korea in 1986. When you look at these images, does it look like the same place?
Yeah, it does, unfortunately. It's both terrifying and hilarious. But I would say that I would not really be very happy seeing that, because I agree with your previous person talking about this visit, that it's two countries desperate to go out of their isolation, and they are isolated to some extent, because there is a big difference now signing this agreement in the fact that previously both countries denied one receiving arms from North Korea and the other one saying that they are not sending anything. Now it's public. They say, yes, we will do that. So that makes a very big difference.
Let me ask you, Irina Busigina, these images, are they being broadcast a lot in Russia, or is this something that Russia keeps quiet?
Thank you for this question. I am not in Russia, but I am closely observing what's going on in Russia and in the Russian media. And yes, they are. And this event with Putin and the signing of his agreement and his visit are perceived as a milestone, epochal event in the relationship between these two countries. And you know, it reminds me of my very much of my Soviet childhood or youth. These are the Brezhnev times, you know, all these fantastic things and the celebrations and all this gigantism, if you want. But if you allow me, will you allow me? I would like to say a couple of sentences about how I see this. Thank you very much, because I see it a little bit differently from the perspective that this visit was about arms and munitions and all these things. I think there are probably three. I will try to be as brief as possible. Three important things. The first is that first, Russia shows to the West, this is a signal, and Russia shows to the West that there is no pariah states, that West can take North Korea as it wants, but for Russia there is none. And of course, this is a search for coalition partners everywhere. But the same thing, the next thing about what we get, you know, what we learned about this visit, this is that the something new about modern authoritarianisms. You know, that they can, that this degeneration from authoritarian to totalitarian order is not an exception. And this is also a Russian way. And that this can happen not in this small scale like in Northern Korea, like an exception. But this is also what is going to happen in Russia. This is very, very clearly and irreversible for me. And the very last thing, and this is about what I think Putin likes very much, what is very dear to him about Northern Korea, is this idea of exceptionalism, distinctiveness. the ideas of Chuch'e, of the what is the basis of the Korean, North Korean state. This is about we are not going to be dictated. We are absolutely sovereign. And look, this is the sovereignism as the and the distinctive civilization. This is one of the ideas that Putin defended these many years, and now this is in the center of the Russian ideology. And this is exactly the case about the North Korea.
Well, Théo Clément, I wanted you to rebound on that, because you're sitting in East Africa, where many people say that Russia's invasion of Ukraine is not their fight. This us versus them mentality spelled out there by Irina, is that something that resonates?
I mean, I've been training African officials on the implementation of various sanctions regimes, and for various governments, and we do get a lot of attention and interest from our African partners. But I'm always getting, like, towards the end of the trainings that we deliver, always getting a tap on the shoulder and someone telling me, I mean, it's great that the US wants to pressure the DPRK, et cetera, but we don't really see why they are going to pressure us into doing the work for them. We don't see why it's really our problem. There have been longstanding relationships between Africa and the DPRK or with China, and it's been not always a win-win deal, but let's just say that many countries in the region have taken the best out of these deals, and they don't really see a reason to stop based on another country's pressure. But yeah, the person that was talking before me, when it comes to sovereignty, when it comes to showing a pattern of exceptionalism, I think she's very right. I don't know much about Russia, but on the North Korean side, at least, it's definitely what the North Koreans have been showcasing over the last few years, even during COVID, even during the worst of self-inflicted isolation, like literally being cut off from the rest of the world. We can still continue to live the way we want, or the North Korean government wanted to live.
Certainly, we heard a clip there during that report we played at the top of the North Korean president, and music to the ears of his Russian counterpart is Kim calling Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine a special military operation. Let's listen.
Korean friends take an objective and balanced position on the topic of the Ukrainian settlement and understand the true initial causes of the crisis.
Henry Haggard, we're in parallel universes here.
Yeah, this is, to me, of course, they're trying to justify their illegal invasion, and they're looking to anyone to give them a fig leaf of diplomatic support. And I guess I agree with what Irina said, but I just would qualify this. I think it's the flip side of the pariah issue. She suggested that Russia is showing they're not a pariah state, that they have these relations with others. I would suggest that actually it's them embracing their pariah status by formalizing a relationship with a known pariah state in North Korea. So I think this is really, Russia really must be getting a lot from North Korea. I mean, the reports suggest as much, but for them to really come down to the level of North Korea in this way suggests real desperation.
Let me ask you about that, because you heard Pierre-Antoine Donnet saying that what had been denied earlier is no longer. In 2017, Russia, among the Security Council members that imposed strict caps on North Korea's oil imports. But back in March, the Financial Times this year reporting how Moscow had started shipping hydrocarbons from the port of Vostochny. The paper at the time counted at least 5 tankers in what may be, and maybe you know more about this than I do, Henry Haggard, a straight-up oil-for-ammo barter deal.
So, I mean, it is speculation that's accepted by all, but I think the most important part here for Kim is to formalize that barter, so it's not a one-off deal, but he has a X number of years supply of oil, food, but also military technology. So that's really the... in addition to formalization of him as not alone, not being alone, as I mentioned at the top, I think the real goal for Kim is to have some kind of institutionalization of this aid that you mentioned.
Irina Busigina, what does that say about Vladimir Putin's campaign in Ukraine?
You mean his visit to North Korea now, right?
Yes.
Yes. So I think this is what you mentioned. You know, this is this thing about special military operation. You know, and this is for Putin is very important that this thing also in Northern Korea and elsewhere where Putin can get it is labeled as special military operation, and this is what he likes to, you know, he has these stereotypes of how he puts things, and you know, in Russian is сбалансированный подход. This is what was mentioned now. Balanced approach. Balanced approach means that they support this special military operation status. But what does it mean? It means that this goes beyond the rules. You know, it's not legal. It's special, and it should not be discussed in the because it's special military operation. So this is the endeavor of the state, which should not be any case discussed and criticized by the society. And this exactly this approach and this support he found in North Korea. And I would like to add to what Henry said. I agree with him about this not to be alone idea. And I also think though for Korea, you know, North Korea is such a peculiar state. You know, what would be North Korea without the support of China? How it could exist in a way? It's not to exist, but it does because of the other states, because of the external powers. And it was China previously, but it's also Russia now. So for North Korea, it's a fantastic deal, fantastic thing that Kim expands, you know, this support, which was previously focused on China, and now it is not.
And for its part, let's get China's reaction. Beijing, you could say, sticking to script, playing its cards close to its chest when the foreign ministry briefing reacted to Putin's state visit to North Korea.
The DPRK and Russia, as friendly and close neighbors, naturally need exchanges and cooperation to develop their relationship. And the relevant high-level exchanges are bilateral arrangements between the two sovereign states.
Pierre-Antoine Denet, very much reading the script.
Yeah.
And not giving away much there.
Exactly. So it shows the fact that China is a bit embarrassed.
Embarrassed?
Yeah. Because you see, this visit has several meanings. One is for Putin to show China that, of course, Russia needs China very much. But to some extent, DPRK shows that they have all other allies, including this pariah state.
Because we've been, over the last 2 years, we've been saying just how much Vladimir Putin is beholden to Xi Jinping, how he can't do anything to make him cross. You're saying that he might be annoying him, or in this case?
The thing is that, you know, the CCP really detests people who are not previsible.
Not predictable.
Predictable, yeah. And actually, these two guys, both Kim Jong-un and also Putin, are actually unpredictable. And this is very much annoying. These two are also using nuclear threats, which is not very much the taste of the CCP. And if you look back on what China has said before, they expressed their opposition to these military nuclear threats coming from Russia. And now you have these two people together. And you see what is public, but you don't see what has been discussed, and which is not going to be public.
Yeah, because it was pretty vague, this idea of a strategic partnership.
Yeah, and actually, you have two nuclear states. And if, on the Russia side, Putin decides to help Korea in improving their nuclear arsenal, that would be very, very much dangerous, including for China.
Théo Clément, the beginning of a beautiful friendship between North Korea and Russia. How does China react?
Well, I mean, honestly, I don't think it's the beginning of a beautiful friendship. There's been back and forth between the Soviet Union and the DPRK and then Russia and the DPRK for quite some time. It's a purely opportunistic relationship, in my view. Opportunistic for Russia in many ways, for the DPRK, opportunistic in the sense that just like the DPRK's alliance pattern during the Cold War, it might be using this new hyped up relationship with Russia to pressure Beijing into coming closer to the DPRK, because the relationship between China and the DPRK for the last 10 to 15 years, basically since Kim Jong-un came to power, has been strained, has been frustrating for both sides. And pressuring the Chinese by entering this new area of cooperation with Russia and pretending that Russia, that Putin is Kim Jong-un's best friend, which was the word that was used during the press conference, is a bit of a tap on the shoulder.
And is that Kim's calculus to try to get China's attention by cozying up to Russia? Or is he switching allegiances?
No, not switching. Like, the North Koreans have been very, very keen not to always fully align with the USSR, Russia, or China. They've always been switching back and forth as in order to maintain as much independence and sovereignty as possible. The thing is that when they were stuck in a one-way relationship with China, when Russia was basically looking elsewhere, it didn't lead to any improvements when it comes to economy, when it comes to the military of the DPRK. What I think they are trying to do now is to show the Chinese that they can live without them, and that if China doesn't react, North Korea is going to escape its sphere of influence, even though I don't really
and
like
can
term.
You, Théo, can you assuage Pierre-Antoine's fears that this could lead to Russia giving North Korea help with its nuclear program?
Well, I mean, it's likely, honestly. That's definitely something that the DPRK will want, among many other things. I don't want to overemphasize the nuclear aspect of things. But among many other patterns of military cooperation, economic cooperation, humanitarian support, investment infrastructure, getting access to more advanced military technology and nuclear technology, ballistic technology is definitely something on Kim Jong-un's shopping list, I'm afraid.
So, listening to the rest of the panel here, Henry Haggard, is this just a transactional meeting, or is this a seismic shift?
I do think this represents a real shift, because now North Korea, however the dynamic plays out with Beijing, as the panelists mentioned, they have a tight and close and long-time relationship with China. It might be that China holds their nose and gives support. They, as Pierre-Antoine mentioned, they are likely upset at any further provocations, especially in the nuclear realm. But regardless, this is a shift, because now we have North Korea with friends, multiple friends, and this will really change how South Korea, Japan, and the United States are looking at the region.
Yeah, the visit preceded Tuesday by warning shots in the demilitarized zone that separates the two Koreas. Second time this month that South Korean soldiers had done so. Seoul downplaying it, calling what happened Tuesday an accident on the part of North Korean soldiers working on border reinforcements. Still, it follows quite the escalation of late. Let's see, you had first South Korean activists sending balloons with memory sticks that contained K-pop songs in them. Then Pyongyang responding with trash balloons that even contained feces. And now the return of blaring loudspeakers across the DMZ.
South Korea installing loudspeakers and Putin visiting North Korea don't come as a security threat to the public like us, but I think it's enough to send a message to the political forces.
So let me ask you, Henry Haggard, how will South Korea react to all this?
Well, I think that the gentleman just said it right. This is, does send a message to the political leadership. What it allows North Korea to do is to have a freer hand to be more provocative. Generally, historically, North Korea is doing what they can to boost their own domestic support, to show that they are standing up to the South Korea, to the United States. So having this safety blanket of Russia, of whatever arrangement they've made, they've signed with Russia, having their historic relationship with China, this is a lot of security for them that allows them to be more provocative, both in testing, but also in these other ways that we're starting to see now around the DMZ with balloons. I would expect to see a series of further provocations in coming weeks and months.
Théo Clément, you agree?
Yeah. I'm pretty much in line with this. I mean, we are back 10 years. When I started my doctoral dissertation on the DPRK, we were talking about, like, we were seeing loudspeakers at the DMZ. We were seeing this Christmas tree in the shape of a cross. We were seeing trash being sent by the North Koreans. And I mean, in a way, I'm kind of relieved that we are seeing like this childish and harmless or almost harmless provocation so far. But at the same time, I'm also a bit worried that we are going back into vicious circles of just childish provocations on both sides in a setting where any misstep can lead to a quick escalation.
Of course, Irina Busigina, 10 years ago, Russia was in sync with the rest of the United Nations Security Council. That's no longer the case.
Indeed, this is no longer the case. But let me tell you, we all know that 10 years ago, it was a different world, absolutely different world. It was absolutely different Russia. And now we have what we have. And again, Putin showed that there are no kind of red lines to him, or, you know, at least he doesn't see them. And I wanted to say, this is about shift, non-shift, you know, in this relationship between Russia and North Korea. China is the second player here, not the second, the third player here, and very important player. And then what Theo said, that this is it can be, or it's already annoying for China. If this cooperation and coalition building between Russia and North Korea, Korea would be too annoying to China, then I'm absolutely sure that Chinese leadership can explain in very bare words to Mr. Putin that it's not going to happen with the Putin plans with the North Korea, because this is China who determines the rules here, and this is not Putin, and this is not the Kim, so the North Korean leadership, because these two countries are moving in the very narrow corridors of possible.
Again, I ask the question to you, Irina, because we all remember how China got Russia to delay its invasion of Ukraine until after the Winter Olympics in 2022. Does China still have that much sway?
It's to me, right?
Yes.
Yes. I would not only that much, but even more so. Even more so. It's the Chinese significance, importance for Russian everything, I would say, for the outcome of the war, for the future of the Russian state, for everything. China is the only hope. It's not North Korea, it's not Vietnam, it's not Iran, I don't know what. It's absolutely China. And Putin knows how to speak, not big brother, but small brother. When he talks to the he knows how to do that to the Chinese leadership, and this asymmetrical relationship, very strange, very perverse, I would say, would continue to develop.
But you said earlier, Pierre-Antoine Donnet, how the Chinese don't like surprises.
Yes.
So can Xi Jinping, if we base ourselves on what Irina was just saying, can they at one point say, all right, everybody out of the pool? This is we have to tone this down.
Well, you see, China wants everything to be organized, and they share the same goal, which is to get America out of this region with North Korea and also with Russia. So they share that goal. But nevertheless, they don't want it. They don't want this to be chaos or chaotic. They have time, while maybe Putin doesn't have that time. So here there is a kind of different timing. For China, the main objective is November the 5th in the United States. They will wait for that to see if Trump is going to be elected or not. Before that, they are going to be cautious. They are going to tell Putin, don't go too far. You will not help us. You will not help our common objective. So do they have sway on Putin? I think they have. But they don't have sway on Kim Jong-un at the end. And this is the major problem for them.
Yeah, we focused in this show on naval showdowns in the South China Sea. They're continuing, by the way, the Philippines, claiming one of its Coast Guard crew was seriously hurt in a ramming incident at a disputed shoal this week. But the Sea of Japan can sometimes also get crowded. Moscow announcing the start this week of 12 days of naval drills, setting sail from the port of Vladivostok. Russia, by the way, and Japan still at odds over the Kuril Islands. There you see a map showing that, there's plenty of strategic points in the Pacific, not to mention all the U.S. troops that are still in South Korea. Henry Haggard, these naval exercises, is it just, again, a bit of pageantry?
I mean, this is Russia's playbook. They're going to keep pushing. This is something we've seen over and over throughout the years. The exercises and pushing the envelope, both for China and Russia, is pretty standard. Happening at this moment, certainly not helpful. And I think it's important I think it highlights the fact that Russia and North Korea are engaging in an arms deal to threaten the stability of the region, while the United States, South Korea, Japan, and other allies and partners are working together to ensure security and prosperity for the region. So it really underscores just the direction that Russia is taking. North Korea, it's pretty much expected, but Russia taking this really small ball approach focused on Ukraine, it's really just shows that Russia is not a major player for the future. And I think it shows that countries like South Korea just can no longer rely on Russia as a reliable partner, because Russia is making this institutional choice to be isolated, to be partnered with a pariah.
And are you surprised, as a former diplomat stationed in South Korea, at that rapprochement between South Korea and Japan?
So the rapprochement it makes perfect sense. These are our two close allies. Even in the times where South Korea and Japan were having lots of tensions, still huge amounts of trade, cultural exchange, lots of trilateral discussions with us, lots of coordination, even in the defense and intelligence realm, even when things were a little bit tense. So the fact that we have really moved forward is a testament to the courage of President Yoon and Prime Minister Kishida, who have taken the strategic decision, in part due to the neighborhood, but I think because it's the right political choice. And as soon as they started working with us on what the possibilities and potential were for trilateral coordination and cooperation, it just has been diplomatically snowballing in a very positive way.
Théo Clément, do you agree with what we've heard in this discussion about how Russia and China can manage relations with one another, but North Korea is, whatever happens, a loose cannon?
No, I don't think North Korea is a loose cannon. I don't think North Korea is unpredictable. I think North Korea is following its own, I mean, I don't like the term, but its own way of doing things, its national interest.
So how do you read, for instance, the fact that they've done these big ballistic missile tests with missiles flying over the island of Japan?
Well, basically, if you look at the map, either you're shooting over South Korea, which the North Koreans consider to be their territory, Russia or China or Japan. So even with a very lopsided trajectory, basically you have to go over Japan. Not that it's a good choice in any way, but in the end, geography matters.
All right. And while Pyongyang rolls up the red carpet after Vladimir Putin's departure, Hanoi getting ready to roll it out. The Russian president's next stop, Vietnam, which is a growing trade partner for the United States, but still is a soft spot for Moscow.
Due to the current tensions in the world, Vietnam and Russia need to strengthen cooperation in the face of threats to the peace and security of Vietnam and Russia.
I'm not sure if that's polite discourse or if that's what ordinary Vietnamese truly believe. Pierre-Antoine Denis, your thoughts on Vladimir Putin going next to Vietnam, which is becoming so crucial for trade for the United States.
Yeah, but you see, on the Vietnam side, it's only natural diplomacy because their neighbor is China and they have been for hundreds of years enemies. So having Putin coming now after Biden, which also visited Hanoi not long ago, it's a way to show that they don't put their eggs in the same basket. So they only have benefits out of that. As for Putin, it's also a way to again tell Beijing, you see, we're not that alone with you. We have other cards in our game.
Irina Busigina, you agree that this visit to Vietnam is more about China than the United States?
I would agree that this visit to Vietnam is about Vietnam. Because in a way, you know, this is what Henry said, that Russia, you know, it was Russia's Putin's choice to be isolated. But this is absolutely not how Putin sees it. Absolutely not. He believes that Russia is a global player, and he tried to recruit these potential coalition partners as everywhere, you know, as a global power, everywhere in the world. And China had a special relationship, although within the Soviet Union, with its all, you know, kind of anti-colonization past and so on and so forth. And this is already a cooperation in tourist areas, in energy. This is even more, you know, the ideas about this cooperation. And what I can say that Vietnam is very much advertised in the Russian media, in the Russian sources. Go to Vietnam, fantastic country, you know. So this is where you can spend, you know, your vacation, everything, to open a business, small business, all these things. So Vietnam is important as a Vietnam. Okay, sure, not only, but in the core, this is Vietnam as it is for Russia.
Henry Haggard, are we paying too much attention to the North Korea leg and not enough to the Vietnam leg of this trip?
No, I think this is right. Vietnam and the United States have a $130 billion trade relationship. We signed a comprehensive strategic partnership last year. Our relationship with Vietnam is strong and getting stronger. Russia going to Vietnam, as Irina said, I mean, Putin definitely is trying to continue with his global presence and global posture. Vietnam has a lot of history with Russia, so it makes sense to have a visit. But a visit, a diplomatic visit, is a lot different than a military arrangement or a treaty like Russia and North Korea are signing. It's a lot different than Russia going to an isolated state. So Russia visiting Vietnam, of course, you know, the United States and I think allies and partners are not, you know, would, if we're given a choice, which we're not, it's between these two countries, we would suggest not welcoming Putin. We would certainly hope that Vietnam does not support Russia's illegal and barbaric war of aggression in Ukraine. But ultimately, a visit by a Russian president to Vietnam is not terribly surprising. And I think in the trend of increasingly positive relations between the United States and Vietnam, and for that matter, between South Korea and Vietnam, I think this is not as much of concern or of note as the visit to North Korea, which I do think will change how Northeast Asia is organized.
And again, Théo Clément, that brings us back to the perception of Vladimir Putin's visits to North Korea and to Vietnam. You just heard the other panelists talking about how Vietnam's a country that does a lot more trade with the United States, far more than it does with Russia. And yet, in the eyes of people where you are right now, in Tanzania or elsewhere in East Africa, Vladimir Putin seems on par, a global player, right?
It's a bit of a difficult question. I mean, he's definitely popular. Like Kim Jong-un is also becoming increasingly popular among the so-called Pan-African anti-imperialist crowd that we are seeing in Africa. How much these people do represent the average inhabitant of East, West, North Africa, I'm actually not quite sure. What's sure is that Vietnam is a much more important player than the DPRK ever is. We do tend to have this fixation on the DPRK because of the nuclear crisis, because of the division of the peninsula. But in the end, if we look at how much the visit of Putin is going to have a concrete impact, how much trade is going to be generated, how much defense partnership, tourism, blah, 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 it's definitely going to be stronger on the Vietnam side rather than the relationship between Russia and the DPRK. So, yeah, I'm actually quite inclined to believe that Putin visiting Hanoi, even though it's much less attractive, it's much less exciting, it's definitely going to have a much more important impact than Putin spending 24 hours in Pyongyang.
Irina Bosygina, final word on this. When you look at this trip as a whole, when you look at the fact that Russia has had a few successes on the battlefield in Ukraine of late, which is feeling the strain, does Moscow have the momentum? Is Putin showing strength or weakness at this point?
This is a good question. I'm not sure you can put it in this dichotomy, strength or weakness. This is very much, as Theo said, this is very much the question of time. You know, this is and this is also a matter of his self-perception. You know, Putin has never, ever, in his foreign policy and nor in the domestic policy, ever recognized any of his, you know, mistakes that he ever made any mistakes. So he feels as strong, and this is the only possibility. You know, if he would, this is not about this regime. This is not about this transition from altruism to totalitarianism. There, when the leader can ever feel weak, it would otherwise not happen. He feels very strong, and this is that he is convinced by the what is called public intellectuals in Russia that he is very strong, and it will be the happy end, the victorious war, and this is what he sells to the public, and this is the image which he absolutely has to demonstrate to the Russian public, that he has no doubts that Russia would win, and that Russia is supported by the what is called Global South, or if you want to call it in a different way. And the last thing, you know, this visit to Vietnam. The people in Russia, they don't know about the relationship between the U.S. and the strong relationship U.S. and Vietnam, because the people in Russia know less and less what is going on in the West, less and less. But they know that Putin is there, and when Lavrov goes jumps from one African country to the other, it gives you the impression that these are the whole variety of very different countries in many different in all the continents. They support Putin, and this is what he wants.
All right, the perception is so important there. Irina Bosygina, I want to thank you so much for joining us from Boston. I want to thank Henry Haggard in Washington, Théo Clément in Dar es Salaam, Pierre-Antoine Donnet. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.